You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
Hello, everyone. I'm Jinx Monsoon, here with some brand new Hi Jinx with me, Jinx Monsoon. I am beside myself with excitement today because never in a million years did I think I would one day have the opportunity to have a full-blown conversation with Deborah Wilson. Yet that is what I'm doing here today. We're going to talk all about her time on Mad TV, her experience acting for video games, and she's just going to give you a bunch of really amazing life advice like the goddess she is. So hunker down and sink your teeth into some brand new hijinks.
Forever Dog.
Hello, everyone. I'm Jinx Monsoon, and welcome to Hi Jinx, a podcast where I, an internationally tolerated drag superstar, get to interview compelling and fascinating people about how they became who they are and why they do what they do. Today, we are joined by a living legend, comic genius, video game voice actor, personal nerd favorite for me, and of course, star of Mad TV, Deborah Wilson. Hi, Deborah.
Hi, Jinx.
Thank you. After I gave you the rundown, I almost said hello, Deborah, which I've never screwed up my own intro like that before.
And I still would have said, hi, Jinx. Hi, Jinx. All the hi, Jinx ensues.
Deborah, this is so exciting for me. I grew up watching you. I started drag at 15 and was watching Mad TV from like 10 years old on. And I don't know, I have to assume you know, but you and all the women of the golden days of Mad TV are drag icons. Like I learned about drag and what kind of characters I wanted to play by watching all of you fantastically talented women on Mad TV in my youth. And, you know, you have to know that your Whitney Houston is just constantly quoted amongst every drag queen in every dressing room. So,
wow. What a blessing. What a blessing. Thank you. And a humble blessing at that. So thank you for that. And as Joan Rivers might say, oh, you old drag bitch.
Did you know that you were legendary amongst drag queens? Have drag queens stopped you on the street and kissed your feet and thanked you for your contribution?
No, but I went to a drag show, which was a lip sync drag show, and it was absolutely amazing and fantastically, brilliantly credible. I don't use incredible. incredible when people do what they do and they love what they do and they work towards it and they work for it and they evolve themselves and they evolve, you know, what they do and have that determination. So to me, it's never incredible. It's always extremely and fantastically and amazingly, realistically credible. So when I went to see the show, there was someone who was doing lip syncing to my Whitney Houston stuff from Whitney Screws Up the Classics.
Yes.
but that was, she took a snippet of that, but she was doing some other things. And at one point I came up to just throw money at her. And she had on Stevie Nicks, I can't think of the name of the song, but she had on a Stevie Nicks song. And then we started doing that together. And then at one point I just turn and walk away off the stage. Because there was a part of the song, and I can't think of the name of it, but there was a part of the song that was pick up the pieces and go home. So I dropped the money and I turned and I went home back into the audience. And it was just an amazing, amazing moment to have that experience and watch her, just watch her marvel at lip syncing Whitney Screws Up the Class at that moment.
Did you notice if her, like, the inside of her brain exploded? Did she have an aneurysm when that moment happened?
No, and I'll tell you why. Because she was the consummate professional and she just allowed the moment. And when I came up to do that moment with her, we were just having this moment, this experience, and nothing mattered but the experience itself. Mm-hmm. So she never took herself out of context, which is the consummate professional. She was not playing. She was not playing. And that, I think, is what drove the audience crazy, because they couldn't tell if it was planned or if it just happened. And it was one of those experiences that just happened. So as you recall the story, I think the emotion can come back to you because now you're outside of the experience. But during that experience, this bitch was just in it to win it. And it was like, yeah, bitch, let's do this. And then I turned away on pick up the pieces and go home. And I walked off. And it was just brilliant. And afterwards, we hugged, I praised, and then I did go home. Literally, I went home at that point.
Well, I just absolutely love that. I mean, those are the moments that the audience couldn't have guessed that day that they were going to witness one of those sheerly brilliant and serendipitous moments of live entertainment. What was Mad TV like for you?
It was like everything. I mean, it was everything you've ever felt in your life. Because it was a huge experience for me. It was 8 seasons. So it was every experience you could ever experience, and every feeling you could ever think and have and be a part of. There was nothing, there was no stone left unturned when it came to the emotion of it and the drama of it and the pathos of it and the beauty of it and the joy of it and the fun of it and the hilariousness of it and the sorrow of it and the sadness of it. It was every experience and every emotional range from A to Z.
I think one of the reasons why it resonates so much with drag performers in particular is because it really went there with its humor in a way that other sketch comedy shows weren't going, and in a way that, like, pushed the envelope and tested the limits so much more than almost anything else that was on TV. And it's just continuously quoted today. And then I see young queer people quoting it. And I'm like, oh, you watch Mad TV? And they're like, oh, I don't know what Mad TV is. I learned this from some other queen or some other queer person out in the world. And it's funny that the show resonated so specifically with the queer community, I think. Because, I don't know, it felt like the naughty, you know, the naughty secret sketch show.
Like, yeah. Because you know why? It's for everything. Jinx, it's everything that you just said. It is the epitome of pushing the envelope on that social scale and that political scale and being able to be as broad as possible. So when you think that and then you kind of equate that to the LGBTQ community, it is envelope pushing. It is testing the limits, and it is in the face of politics and in the safe space of what's going on socially and in pop culture and in the world of celebrity. It is pushing all of those things. And I think with the with audiences that are not in the LGBT community, like directly immersed in as the LGBTQ community, it's a matter of, wow, they can say it, but I won't. I won't say it in certain company. But the LGBT community is like, nope, I've been through enough. I don't hide my shit. I don't hide myself. And if they say it, then they're giving us permission to say it too. As opposed to regular audiences that are the quote unquote regular audiences that are like, well, I'll let them say it. Because, you know, I can talk about what they did and feel comfortable in all circles because I didn't say it. I may be thinking it and I may laugh at it because I resonate with it, but I wouldn't mm-hmm. say this out loud in certain circles. So it's really, I overstand why the LGBT community is so close to that experience and yeah. why. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite character or a favorite sketch or a favorite impersonation that you did on your 8 seasons of Mad TV?
You know what? There are things that I absolutely love. I don't know if I call them my favorite, because as soon as I say that, someone else will bring up something. I'll be like, oh my God, you remember yeah. that? And then I'll wax nostalgic about that. And so I'm hesitant to call anything my favorite, but there are mm-hmm. memories that I have that are overwhelming and stuff that I bring up still to this day that I absolutely love the experience of and why. I was the kind of person on the show, I was the one on the show that did the tongue twisters and the fast speaking.
Yes, yes.
And so there was a sketch with Will Sasso that was a parody commercial, like a local regional commercial of a guy named Big John, and he had a shirt barn. And then the sketch did so well, it was called Big John's Shirt Barn, Big John's Shirt and Tie Barn. And he was like, you know, these commercials are costing me money, Thelma. And, you know, pick up the pace. Because I was telling people how to get to Big John's Shirt Barn. And so the music kept going faster and faster and faster and faster and faster. And I would do the track faster.
Yeah.
And that was fun. And it was also, I played a white woman and no one said a word. I played a white woman and no one said a word. I played a white woman and no one said a word. I played a white woman and no one said a word. I played a white woman and no one said a word.
I do think, I mean, I think about Mad TV a lot because, like we've been talking about, pushing the envelope and testing the limits. And I know how a lot of things are in a state of flux right now. And it's funny because I still find everything that I found as a teenager funny. I still find it all funny today. And I think that there are certain things like Mad TV that get kind of grandfathered in, even in this time of consciousness and, you know, mindfulness. And there's just certain things that it's kind of like, well, we're gonna let that come with us because of the impact yeah. it had, even if it's not maybe the way we do things today. But for me, Mad TV, I mean, I don't know what I would have done as an early drag queen if I hadn't been so inspired by y'all's performances, like, so early on. And I'm not kidding. Like, just everything was quoted in the dressing rooms and so many of your characters. I remember just being, was there an inspiration, like a real life inspiration for Bunifa Latifah Sharifa Halifa Jackson?
Oh, yeah. let me tell you something. Bunifa happened at least 7 to 10 years before Mad TV.
Okay.
And it was an improv in a sketch in New York City. I was working with a sketch and improv all female group, comedy group called Significant Others. And at one point we had an improv sketch where we did interviews. We did in-depth interviews with people in a particular situation. And we asked the audience what situation, you know, who's the celebrity this had situation happened with. And there was one, and it was like Marlon Brando. And this was the situation. And so we each had to come up with, what is our relationship with Brando? What do we do? Did we work with him? Did we work for him? Are we an eyewitness to something? Did we work on a set? And so for me, it was just a matter of, oh, I was his housekeeper. And here's my relationship with him, because I traveled with him and we were in Tahiti and, you know, for this and that and this and that, and we traveled the world and I was his housekeeper. I was his friend and confidant and I was his housekeeper, and he liked me because I was so bold and brash and I would tell him the truth. And so as this housekeeper, I was like, yeah, I mean, because it was like, it felt, I wanted to make it seem different. Like, why would this person be a housekeeper beyond being Black, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Because,
mm-hmm.
you know, to do the cooking, the cleaning, and I didn't want to take that stereotypical route that I'm Black, so it's naturally for me to be a housekeeper. It was like, no, we were friends, and he liked how sassy I was because I was so honest, and he wanted that honesty around him. And at one point during that improv, someone asked what my name was, and I literally blurted out just like this, Bunifa Latifah Halifa Sharifa Jackson. The whole name. The whole name, just like that. Tip of my tongue, boom. And that's how she came to be. So Mad TV was a culmination of the writers, the hair department, wardrobe, to be able to go, let's continue to develop her. Because each one of them had an idea, and all of those ideas were so solid on their own that when they came together, it was fucking comedy gold.
Yeah. I want our listeners to know that before there was there was What Did I Do? That's one of my favorite.
Yes.
Before there was there was What Did I Do?
What did I do? Wait, James, why are you laughing? Wait, what? Okay, just tell me. What did I do?
My mind is being blown. I don't know how to describe, like, if you know, young gay ass drag queen teenage me could know that one day I'd be sitting in my office closet on a Zoom call with you, getting to hear you say these quotes directly to me. It's just blowing my mind. So I can't reiterate enough just like the impact you've had on my life, on drag queens' lives, on other queer people's lives.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
This episode is brought to you by Beyond Natural Pet Food. Beyond Pet Food helps me care for what matters, my pets and my world. They help me nourish my pets with high-quality natural ingredients, like wild-caught salmon and organic free-range chicken. Beyond also has responsible sourcing practices and a long-term partnership with the Nature Conservancy. Beyond Pet Food, your pet, your world. Learn more at beyondpetfood.com.
I'm a complete video game nerd, and I bought a new game just at the recommendation of someone. I hadn't played the first one, but it was Castle Wolfenstein 2.
Wolfenstein, the new Colossus.
The new one. Yeah, and I'm playing the game, and I get to a certain point in the game, and a character walks in. She is a badass liberation fighter, and it's you. And it wasn't just your voice. It was you. You did the animatronic acting as well.
Yes, it's called performance capture.
Okay, yeah. It blew my mind once again. I'm like, I'm sitting here on an airplane, probably stoned on some edibles, playing on my Nintendo Switch. And the next thing I know, CGI Deborah Wilson is coming in telling me about the fight we're in the middle of. What was that experience
like? Big afro. that character's name for Wolfenstein 2, the new Colossus, is Grace Walker. And on YouTube, somebody put together all the clips of Grace Walker, all the curse and swear scenes. I'm like, well, that's a lot because I swear in every fucking scene. It was an amazing experience. It wasn't my first venture into performance capture, but it was a really, really powerful one with an amazing director who is my guru on every level when it comes to acting, when it comes to directing, when it comes to video games. And I've worked with him on a number of games, and I trust him, and I'm vulnerable with him, and I'm open, and I bleed out, and he is my transfusion every single time. His name is, I have to give a big shout out to Tom Keegan. Just brilliant. And he has just guided me and loved me and helped me shape what I want to bring to the table and make it work for myself, him, and the game developers and the storyline and everything else. So that Grace Walker is definitely dedicated to a lot of the guidance and love of director Tom Keegan. But yeah, it was an amazing experience, and he'll keep you honest and he'll keep it real. So whatever you bring to the table, he will carve it and serve it and say, oh, but I'm going to put this on this plate with this cup and spoon and knife and fork. So yes, you bring that, but here's how I'm going to prepare that meal so that when everybody tastes it, they're all getting the same thing, as opposed to saying, hey, mine doesn't taste the same as hers. And yeah. Everyone is happy. Everyone is satisfied. And everyone feels like they truly had a meal together. And he does that with each character. And Grace Walker was one of those characters that in the audition process, he guided me and nurtured me so that the game developers and the gaming company could go, yeah, she's the one.
Yeah. That's so awesome because, you know, I don't even know what the process of the motion capture is like.
It is a huge process. It's a phenomenal huge process, technically and physically.
I mean, I saw some pictures of you in the motion capture gear for my research for today's episode. And I mean, first of all, you're strapped in like, you know, Star Wars Death Trooper outfits. but the effect is amazing because in the video game, I had to like keep pausing and being like, was this filmed? It was one of my first experiences, you know, playing a game where they had the actors actually act out the characters and do the motion capture, which is like, it brings so much more to it than just voiceover. And it was amazing how much of your like acting work I saw by way of this video game.
Yeah, it's theater work, darling. It's theater.
Yeah.
I remember in 1929, but it's theater work, darling. It is, and it keeps you honest because you're wearing HMC. HMC stands for head camera mount, mm-hmm. or HMC head mount camera. So, and that camera has two extension bars that hold the cameras directly in front of your face with lights, with your own personal ring lights, and so it captures your facial movements, and your body doesn't lie. Your emotions don't lie. The truth is there. And so it really, like live theater, keeps you honest and open and on your toes. So I'm very proud of that video game. And I'm very proud of the work. And I'm very proud of how Grace Walker turned out.
Yeah, she's an amazing character. So this is me telling everyone to go out and get Wolfenstein.
The new Colossus.
The new Colossus. It was the first Wolfenstein game I had ever played. And I was going into it complete like tabula rasa, but I did like stop the game. And I think I pulled up my phone to like do all this research. I was like, that has to be Deborah Wilson. There's no mistake. It's Deborah. And it blew my mind yet again.
Yeah.
Do you have other favorite voiceover experience specifically? You've done so much voiceover work.
Oh my God, are you kidding? I'm working on some projects now, one of which won a Peabody Award. The Baby Shark song, Baby Shark. Well, Nickelodeon turned it into an animated series, and we're already on our second season. It is getting rave reviews, and I play Grandma Shark. So it's called Baby Shark's Big Show. And what I love about it is all the themes are about inclusion and love and validation. Mm. And when we lose ourselves, how to get ourselves back. It's all about self-love and joy and fun and a ton of music that we do. And I'm extremely proud of that. I hope that show goes on forever. I want to have an IV drip in my arm in a fucking hospital bed, still recording that if I could. And the other one, which was very inclusive with non-binary characters, is a Disney series called Owl House. And I'm extreme. Mm-hmm. That's the one that won a Peabody Award. And the main characters are non-binary. And it's just beautiful to have an inclusive experience that tells fun stories and loving stories and magical stories. And every story that a Disney story can tell, that includes everybody to be able to tell it.
Yeah.
And I'm very proud of that show as well. And I'm very proud that they've won a Peabody Award. I'm very... I'm very much grateful to be a part of a show like that as well. Those two particularly stand out. There are a number of them that are amazing, and I love them all. But those two, for those particular reasons, you know, because of the fun, but also the theme and including all types of beings.
Mm-hmm. is, as long as I'm not mistaken, Owl House is about a witch, right?
Yes.
In Magic Land? Yes. Okay. So I've watched a handful of those episodes. Is that experience one where you go in and record your parts separately, solo, or do you work with the cast as like an ensemble? I've only done a handful of voiceover work, and there was one experience where the whole cast was there and we read the script together like it was a radio play. And then most of my experiences were, going in solo and just recording my track separately. But when you've got a cast like you and Wendy Malick on one show, of course, my fantasy is that it's just you and Wendy Malick hanging out backstage in the recording booth doing
characters
for each other.
That would be lovely because I love Wendy Malick. Mm-hmm. I've met her a couple of times and I love her. But for the most part, in general, the blanket generality of recording is that everyone records separately for the most part. And there are those rare times when it becomes a very, very special experience when you record as a group. And that has happened too in a couple of the shows that I've done. But for the most part, everyone records separately. And now with COVID, it's kind of all over the place. You can record from home if your equipment really works with Source Connect and with the studio and what they want and the sound that they're looking for. And if it doesn't, and they want the equal sound of everybody, regardless of how wonderful your equipment is, they want everybody to come into the studio, they'll do that individually these days. Or like I said, it's either home or studio. It's either home or studio, but usually it, even when before the COVID virus, before the pandemic, most people, most shows would record everybody individually.
Okay.
This is NASCAR driver Tony Breidinger inviting you to make a pit stop at Raising Cane's for craveable, hand-battered, cooked-to-order chicken fingers.
Chicken up.
Crispy, crinkle-cut fries.
Hot potato coming through.
Buttery Texas toast.
Toast walking.
And secret Cane's sauce.
Topping off now.
Turbocharge your chicken fingers and get them even faster when you order online or with the Raising Cane's app.
Go, go, go!
Raising Cane's chicken fingers. One love. Raising Cane's is not affiliated with NASCAR.
This is your typical radio ad while eating a Crunch Bar.
This is Automatic of Otto's Used Cars. This weekend only, we're having a whale! Bring the kids. See for yourself. It is huge. Gonna make a big splash. No other dealer can say they have a whale like this.
When things sound dull, turn up the fun with Crunch.
You talked a little bit about music and some of the work that you've done. And something I forgot to mention is part of why your Whitney is so legendary is because you can also sing like Whitney. You wouldn't be able to do Whitney if you didn't have the vocal gift.
You sing at Whitney. Yes, I do. I sing at Whitney. Yes, thank God for the correction. I sing at Whitney.
Was music something you trained in, or is it something that came naturally?
I grew up in a musical household. I grew up in a creative household, so I was singing all the time because of church and choirs. And by the time I was 11, I was ear trained through a 3-part harmony. Mm-hmm. And so my sisters would train me in classical music with 3-part harmony. And we would sing in Bach in church. And then of course, gospel music that one of my sisters would arrange. So, and the three of us were always singing together, and my parents sang in the church choir. And so they, harmony wise knew how to do harmony, 2- and 3-part harmony. And so, it was just par for the course of the Wilson household to be able to sing, you know?
So did that become kind of like, just another tool in your tool belt as a comedian that you could also deliver when it came to doing musical aspects of your characters? Is it something you use beyond Whitney?
Way beyond. That was way before Mad TV. I was mm-hmm. in sketch and improv groups in New York City, starting with a group called New York Talk. And there was a musical aspect of the show that was the end of the show, in which we got a suggestion for a title of a song. And then we asked the audience what style of song. And we would do that title in that style. And so it was required that you get up there and do your thing. So,
yeah.
Yeah, that started, yeah. So the music was always in my blood and in my family. And then when it came to doing that in improv groups, or at least with New York Talk, it was a no-brainer. So with Mad TV, when the idea of spoofing Whitney Houston came up, or anybody else, you know, they always came to me, because I was the black chick on the show. And so for 8 seasons. And so it was easy to come to me and go, let's kind of hit that style. And I would be able to at least get close to that and sing at that, you know. And I've done everybody from Eve and Alicia Keys to Beyonce and Mariah, and of course Whitney. And it's interesting because I've also doubled them. So whenever you hear Mariah hit that high note, that really is me. That high pitch, like squeak noise, that is me singing that full note. And so there were sketches, musical parodies, where it was Whitney and Mariah in the same video, which was always fun. Or Mariah and Mariah's alter ego in the same video, which was fun. And then there was one with Alicia Keys and Eve, because they did a song together, and that was me. So it's really fun. And I get a chance to kiki when I see some of those and see me with me doing that. Especially my favorite, I have to admit, I shouldn't say favorite, but this one is Not Insane. It was a Mariah Carey music video that Whitney Houston joins her in the end.
Yeah. I think I know I remember that one. I know I remember one you did as Mariah Carey with Missy Elliott.
Lover Muffin.
Yes, Lover Muffin. And I think, I quoted that one all the time, because my favorite moment was you saying, "I'm Mariah Carey and I'm from Mars." Whitney screws up the classics. And I actually was just watching, my partner is obsessed. Well, I shouldn't say obsessed. He likes Randy Newman. To me, that's as crazy as being obsessed with Randy Newman. And I was like, okay, before I can continue indulging you, like, as you play Randy Newman for me on our vacation.
Yeah.
Need you to see Will Sasso do Randy Newman. Genius. And so I was just watching you as Beyonce recently in one of the Randy Newman sketches.
Yeah. And it's like he pop out, whoop, there comes another one. And he would just pop out these songs.
That's my favorite, is everyone ends with Hannibal, please don't eat any more people. Do you keep up your friendships with people from the Mad TV cast?
You know what? It's a large range of dynamic personalities. And so everybody went off and did their own thing and lived their own lives. And so that friendship was a core friendship based on Mad TV, the proximity and the joy of working together, the collaboration, and the things we were meant to learn from each other as human beings, and to be amazed and be fans of the work when we're watching other people's stuff. And that happened a lot on Mad TV. But like I said, all things must change, and there is a transmutation in each and every one of us, creatively and dynamically and personally and spiritually and life-wise. You know, Mary Shear got married and had children, and Nicole Sullivan got married and had children. And so Alex Borstein got married and had children. And so everybody's life evolved differently. And so keeping up with each other was not one of those things that came into play, unless we would have a group text, because we were asked to come back for a reunion, and we would, and that shit would start all fucking over again. The silliness would start all over again. And Michael McDonald would always kick it off, because he has a love-hate relationship with me. And it's a spoof love-hate relationship. So it's not a real, as in, I can't stand Deborah Wilson. It really is, oh, God, you know, that kind of a fun thing. Like the little brother who hates the big sister is like, oh, yeah, I'm so done with you. Yeah, yeah, oh, God, I get you. That kind of a thing. And it's always lovely and wonderful. And so we haven't group texted in a while because, again, it's got to be based on a circumstance. So our relationships, as beautiful as they were and as powerful and as fun and as loving and an emotional roller coaster as they were also, and that was that reality, and it was palpable and it was real. But we also knew that that was circumstantial because as we continue to have different circumstances, those things weren't the same. They just weren't the same. I still have a very lovely relationship with Alex Borstein between here and Spain, because she moved to Spain. Mm-hmm. And she's back and forth because of her amazing 2-time Emmy winning performance in the marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
Yeah.
And in fact, I'm going to her son Barnaby's bar mitzvah
awesome.
Next weekend. So, yeah. And so we text a lot. When she won her first Emmy for the marvelous Mrs. Maisel, I just texted to congratulate her. Uh-huh. And I never expected anything back, but she texted from the Emmys and she had taken Will Sasso as her date. And she texted me while she was in her seat. It was lovely. It was lovely. And I look forward. So it's been years since I've actually seen her, and I'm looking forward to that.
Well, it's all of that makes, first of all, be sure to give her kid a mazel from me.
I will.
It sounds very similar to the drag race sisterhood because, you know, we become so close. The queens I was on my season with, we became so close because we were isolated, you know, in filming a reality TV show. So we were each other's entire world for like 5 weeks.
Wow.
And then we go back out and do our own lives. And then even the queens who are from different seasons, we do have this like shared experience of having done this reality TV show and competed in this way. And so there was tons of people in my life now that I might not see them for years and we might not text a lot, but then you get us in a dressing room together and it's like no time has passed. And it's like you pick up exactly from the last conversation we had and we can very quickly catch up and then just get back to like as if we spend every day together.
Yes, that I definitely concur in the relationships that I have with people at Mad TV, because at one point we were asked to be a part of a convention and and reunite cast members from various seasons together. And it was like no time had passed.
Yeah. This is unrelated to your body of work, more related to just your physical body. You are covered in tattoos. They are gorgeous.
Thank you.
Starting from like the chin down. Yeah. When did you start this journey on covering your entire body in tattoos? Because I definitely remember the sleeves back in the day.
Yeah. And they weren't really sleeves then. It was just a few. Mm-hmm. It was just a few because with Lita and Melina, most of my skin was clean except for a few things and two on my back, on the shoulder blades of my back. So I started that at an early age. I started that. Well, it's early for some and seemingly late in the world of tattoo for others. But I started getting tattooed when I was about 25 and it was still illegal in New York City. And I went to a place in Mount Vernon, New York, home of Denzel Washington. And it was legal there. And I walked in and I could not stop drinking in all the flash that was on the wall. And this tattoo artist who was very well known, he's passed since then, but Big Joe Kaplan, and anybody who's hardcore into the tattoo world will know of Big Joe Kaplan. And he said, "You'll be back in 2 weeks." And I was. And I said, "How did you know?" He goes, "I saw how you looked at everything. You were drinking it in like you were an addict, number one. And number two, that little rose that I gave you was so simple. It's not enough for you. You're not as simple as that. And that's going to take 2 weeks to heal. So once it heals, you're going to want something around it. You're going to want more. That's not going to be enough for you. And that tiny little rose is not enough for you. You played it safe for the first time. But that's why I knew it was the first time, because you played it safe. And had you gone like, I want this big one. And now I'm done. I got exactly what I've been thinking about for years. But you played it safe. You went conservative in order to test the water to go big. And so each time I started getting more and more pieces, they were for spiritual reasons. They were lessons learned. They were things that said stuff about society and culture and inclusion and a culmination of ideas and belief systems in the world. And it just kept happening more and more and more and more. And at one point, as I was continuing to add pieces to my arm, one of my tattoo artists of the many said, "You're getting sleeved." And I said, "No, I'm not. I'm just getting these individual pieces." And he's like, "That's sleeving." No. Sleeving is, because in my mind, I was like, no, how do I logic not being there? You know, I don't, that's not my destination, because I really hadn't accepted that was a destination yet. I was still in my own evolutionary process. But tattoo artists see people come and go all the time. They know, you know, they don't just sit there and do ink on you and collect money. They're collecting stories and having an experience with you, and you're allowing and trusting, and they're allowing and trusting. And also disciplining you in terms of, that's not going to work for you at this color and that skin tone and this and this.
Yeah.
Are you sure you want that to say that? Doesn't mean what you think it does. You want to do some more research on that. Hey, you're coming in an emotional state. You might want to think about that. Hey, you've been drinking. It's going to thin your blood. You're going to bleed a lot, and it's going to hurt even more, and it won't heal properly. Oh, I mean, whatever they had to bring to the table, you know, the honest ones, the kind ones, the ones that wanted to develop a rapport with you, not because they wanted you to come back and get inked, but because they cared about the ink that they were doing on you in that moment. Those are the people that I kept as friends, and who kept me as friends, and some, and us, and many of us are still very close, even though we're spread out now.
Yeah.
And so getting these stories from people and their lives, and then having them put their ink in me in what I wanted, was just a combination. It was more of a social experience as well as a tattoo experience. And I went back for the social experience and the tattoo experience at the same time. And it just kept getting bigger and bigger. And then finally, when I got to the place, I said, you know what? I'm ready to just accept and receive that I'm getting a bodysuit. And the pieces are going to come when they come, as opposed to me planning out the whole thing.
Do you have any blank spots left?
No, because as far as I'm concerned, my answer is no, because the last 2 to 3 years, I was always looking for negative space to fill up, or finding a space that I can fill out, or adding something and enhancing something and adding color and continuing to enhance that space. And so I did that for the past 2 to 3 years, and one tattoo with my neck piece looks like it was the completed version of what my idea was, but it was, I just want this. You know what? I want to go back and add this. You know what? I want to go back and add this. And that's how all of my tattoos work that way. So that's how my bodysuit came to be. Piece at a time. And through amazing stories with people I love, with the people who did it and I love.
That's so awesome to hear about. Congratulations.
Thank you. I'm finally done. The obsession is over. And every time I told people I was done years ago, they all rolled their eyes. They all were in disbelief. And rightly so. And of course, I'm a Black woman. Don't tell me. So I will give you a dissertation as to why I won't. And then 2 weeks later, show up with another piece.
I love it. Oh, I think one of my superpowers is being able to convince myself of anything I want to believe. Like those closest to me are like, I don't know. I mean, I think I never feel like you're lying to me, because when I look back on the moment when you were lying to me, what it actually was is that you truly believed yourself.
Oh, I never lied. I won't lie to anybody else. It was me I was lying. But then I thought, you know what, darling, I didn't lie to myself. I just bullshitted myself. Is there a difference? Yes. But what is it? I don't have time to explain if you don't know. That's me to me.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would, my work, the one thing that is always important is to bring to my work is integrity and honesty. The creativity is already there. It's integrity and honesty. I need to be steeped in that moment. And I can't fake the funk, because there's no point in showing up if you don't show the fuck out.
Yeah. Words to live by for all my listeners. You can't fake the funk, and there's no point
don't
in showing up,
showing
if,
up
you
if you don't show,
show
the fuck out. There's
show
no
the
point
fuck
in showing
out.
Up if you don't show the fuck out. There's no point in showing up if you don't show the fuck out.
Perfect. That'll be I'll have that t-shirt made for you, and we'll have it sent to you right away.
I will wear it as long as it's a child's medium, because I have titties I still want to show at the age of 60.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I have a couple questions that I ask all my guests. Feel free to answer them however you feel. The first question is, who is your celebrity crush today? And crush can mean however. Listen, I used to try to make it like, who would you want to bang? And then one of my guests, Monet Exchange, made it so filthy that I never wanted to like put that prerequisite on it again. She talked about doing things to Ryan Reynolds that I felt bad to like put out into the world.
Okay.
But you can define crush however you feel like it.
Okay. You said today.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this morning I woke up hit with him on my mind because I miss his work. Paul Gleason. Paul Gleason. Are you familiar with Paul Gleason?
I'm terrible sometimes. If you jumpstart my memory, I bet I know.
He was in The Breakfast Club.
Mm-hmm.
He was the principal.
Oh, there he is. There he is. Yes, I know him.
I woke up with Paul Gleason on my mind today. So Paul Gleason, I miss his work. I miss what the possibility of what he'd be doing right now. Unfortunately, he had cancer. He had developed mesothelioma and lung, which is a form of lung cancer from asbestos. And it took his life. But and then I loved what he did in, he was also in, one of the first things I saw him at other than The Breakfast Club was he was also in the original Die Hard. He was the, mm-hmm. he was the kind of cop that was, wanted to be in charge. You know, he was mm-hmm. kind of a dick, but wanted to be in charge. And you find out that he's a little bit more incompetent than you think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I remember him from Not Another Teen Movie, where he was playing a parody of the character he played.
Yes, I remember that too. And in the same cameo. Suit.
Yeah.
yeah, I woke up with my mind, yes. And he was he was also a crush of mine. I have crushes on certain people in general, that it's like, oh my God. The first time I saw Catherine Zeta-Jones in Zorro, who the fuck? Oh my God, I'm crushing. And sometimes people are like, why that person? Brendan Gleeson, yeah. Irish actor Brendan Gleeson, big time crush. yeah, so people are like, why? I'm like, I can't tell you.
There's something about Gleeson's for you.
Why don't you ask my vagina when it quivers? Don't ask my vagina, doctor.
I'm going to say my crush today is Troye Sivan, just because of the Met Gala. And I am primarily a bottom in my life, mm-hmm. but there are occasionally people so gorgeous that I'm like, I wish I were a top so that I could top Troye Sivan.
Okay. You go. Ain't nobody mad at you. You know I got your back, front, and sides. Let him say something. Let him come at you.
Next question is, and I think I heard you mention this in reference to your tattoos, but do you consider yourself spiritual?
The only purpose of my life is to have a spiritual experience before I leave and shuffle off this mortal coil. That's my only purpose. Everything else is the icing on the cake. Yeah. But I don't get it twisted. That cake is big enough that I'm supposed to serve the world with it.
Mm-hmm.
My purpose in this planet is to have that relationship with God, be defined by that relationship with God, and make sure that I reflect that in every life that comes into being.
I wish people could see the conviction in your face just now. You got really close to the camera. My mind is... I'm going to have to process this later. Like, I'm going to have to sit with myself later. I'm going to be calling every last drag queen I know and be saying, like, just wait, because very soon. My conversation with Deborah Wilson is coming out and y'all can suck it.
Yep. One of my favorite things that I do whenever I leave anything that I'm talking to people is I always do a prayer, and it's very simple. I just go, be blessed, be well, be happy, be healthy. But most importantly, be you, because you are beautiful.
You are just like, okay, so I think your next career move is to just have a TV show where you basically can just get real close to the camera like you've been doing and tell everyone what they need to hear. Because I think, I don't know, you've had so many quotable moments in this conversation. My final question for you is, what is your go-to karaoke song?
Oh, okay. That one is an easy one. Van Morrison, Moon Dance.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance.
With stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance. Neath the cover of October skies. You know the leaves on the trees are falling to the sound of the breezes that blow. And I'm trying to place to the calling of your heartstrings that play soft and low. You know the night's magic seems to whisper and hush. You know, the soft moonlight seems to shine in your blush. Can I just have one more moon dance with you, my love? One more moon dance with you in the moonlight, on a magic night. Can I just have one more moon dance with you, my love?
I don't think we've ever had such a fantastic ending to this episode. Deborah, you have just been everything I could have hoped for and more. Thank you so much for joining us today.
My blessing.
I didn't think I could leave this conversation more in love with you than I already was, but now my hope is someday we can meet in the real world somehow. You know, we'll just have to let it happen naturally because we don't know how our paths will cross, but I cannot wait to just like, I can't wait to go rub this in Sable Cities' face. Sable Cities, if you're listening, I beat you, girl. I just had a conversation with Deborah Wilson before you did, bitch. So,
you know what bitch stands for, right?
What's bitch stand for?
Beautiful, intelligent, talented and tough, creative and courageous. And honest.
Deborah Wilson, everybody.
Bitch, what? You see that concrete out there on the sidewalk? Bitch, you better walk it every day like a red carpet. Every day of your life, that concrete, that street, that curb that some people want to kick you on, get the fuck back up and walk it like a red carpet. There endeth the lesson from your alter negro.
Thank you so much. I feel Whitney coming back to us in this moment.
Yes!
Thank you so much, Deborah Wilson.
Yes!
Do you have social media accounts you would like to plug here? Do you have any?
I have no social media. I'm not on social media. Wait. But I'll tell you this. Someone convinced me a long time ago to go on Cameo.
So Cameo. You are on Cameo?
Wait. You want me to do that? Okay. You know I'm dead, right? They said, yes, I know you're dead. So you must be able to do something on Cameo. I said, all right. Every once in a while, I get on Cameo. Send people some stuff. You know what I'm saying? I don't ask for much. It is a paid service. I'll never raise my price. Because I really like the connecting. And a lot of times people aren't coming to me for birthdays and holidays. Sometimes they just want, you know what? Let's do some praying. Pray for me. I'm telling you what's going on in my family. And you know what? I keep in contact with people too. So once you're done with the Cameo, every direct message. Right now, I'm in prayer and in vigil for a friend who I met on Cameo, whose mother is in the hospital. So I keep up with him. And there are people who have come to me from the past of Cameo and said, hey, I want to connect with you again. And they do, for free. Because once you connect with me, I turn around and make sure that the direct messaging, you don't have to pay for. So whenever you want to contact me, you contact me that way too. And I will respond with my love, my heart. Yes, I'll be there for you every step of the way.
That's extremely gracious of you.
I love you. I always love you.
So fucking good. So everyone listening, be sure to book your cameo with Deborah Wilson. Otherwise, fuck off, because she's not on social media. I want to thank you one more time, Deborah. It was everything I could have hoped for. I absolutely love you. I worship at your altar. You are my goddess. Thank you, Deborah Wilson.
Yes, my
and thank and thank you all so much for listening to Hijinks here on the Forever Dog and Moguls of Media Network. My name is Jinx Monsoon, and we have new episodes every Wednesday, so make sure to search for Hijinks on your favorite podcast app and hit subscribe. You can follow me at The Jinx on Instagram or Jinx Monsoon everywhere else, and that's J-I-N-K-X. You have to use the K because I paid extra for it, and K is very expensive. And I'll see you next Wednesday for some more Hi, Jinx.
Forever Dog.
To listen to Hi, Jinx, ad-free and one day early, sign up for Forever Dog Plus at foreverdogpodcasts.com/plus. Make sure to follow at Forever Dog Team and at Mom Podcasts on social, and rate and review Hi Jinx 5 stars on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. Hi Jinx is produced by Forever Dog and Moguls of Media, aka Mom, hosted by me, Jinx Monsoon, produced by Big Dipper, editing and sound design by Will Pitts, executive produced by Willem Belli, Alaska Thunderfuck, Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey.